from deep inside your radio.
Well, maybe we don't have him surrounded. Maybe we don't have him cornered. The number two in Al-Qaeda? Yeah, maybe he isn't in custody just yet, ladies and gentlemen. You've been following this story, breathlessly reported by the cable news networks all weekend, haven't you? One source they haven't turned to, oddly enough, for a story on what Pakistan, our friend Pakistan, is doing, is the Times of India. They have an interesting slant on it. And I say slant, advisedly. Pakistan hasn't yet delivered Al-Qaeda number two Ayman al-Zawahiri to the United States in exchange for its recognition as a major ally, but the diplomatic bonanza will yield rich pickings, including arms and ammunition, in the coming days. This is what the Times of India says. Reports from Pakistan say accounts of the Pakistani military having cornered a high-value target now appear to be misplaced, but Islamabad's ability to milk Washington of military supplies with promises on various issues remains undiminished. The chatter of high-value target also succeeded in hoodwinking Colin Powell from bringing up Pakistan's nuclear shenanigans, some reports suggested. Following its designation, I missed this entirely, but the Times of India didn't, apparently. Following Pakistan's designation as a major non-NATO ally earlier this week, this despite the fact that its former head of nuclear programs sold nuclear information to North Korea, Libya, and Iran. Pakistan is now eligible for purchase of excess defense articles and equipment the U.S. may leave behind once it leaves the region. And it allows a country to purchase depleted uranium from the United States. This could mean an expanded flow of U.S. military hardware to Pakistan. So it's worth it, you know, to say you have a high-value target for a couple days, and then, oh, darn. Please, I'm not throwing any stones. I know the feeling. It's basically Pakistan just arrived 5 minutes late at the Barney's sale. Hello, welcome to the show.
Every day she takes a morning bath, she wets her hair, wraps a towel around her as she's heading for the bedroom chair. It's just another day. Slipping into stockings, stepping into shoes, dipping in the pocket of her rain. The office where the papers grow, she takes a break, drinks another coffee, and she finds it hard to stay up.
from the edge of America, from the home of the homeless. I'm Harry Shearer. I'm here with this edition of the show. Hey, let's look back, like everybody else is doing, 1 year ago right now. What the show sounded like 1 year ago right now. That's right, because so many stations preempted it. It sounded like that. But this week it sounds like this. Ladies and gentlemen, with new exciting theme music. News from beyond the bubble. Now, this can't qualify as news, except that a news agency is printing it. But it's the news agency of Iran. So I say that to you with full disclaimer. Don't take this, well, don't take anything as gospel, but especially this. This is from the Tehran's Mehr news agency. Not Mehrd, Mehr. But, you know, and it's probably BS. Hey, wouldn't it be great if more news began that way? Ladies and gentlemen, it's probably BS, but tonight NBC Nightly News is prepared to... This is probably BS, but just in case it isn't, you should know that this is going around from Iran. Quote, be very clear to quote this now. Over the past few days, in the wake of the bombings in Karbala, Iraq, and the ideological disputes that delayed the signing of Iraq's interim constitution, there have been reports, see, they won't even stand by it, that U.S. forces have unloaded a large cargo of parts for constructing long-range missiles and weapons of mass destruction in the southern ports of Iraq. A reliable source from the Iraqi Governing Council, speaking on condition of anonymity, told the Mehr news agency in Iran that U.S. forces, with the help of British forces stationed in southern Iraq, had made extensive efforts to conceal their actions. He added that the cargo was unloaded during the night. The source said that in order to avoid suspicion, ordinary cargo ships were used to download the cargo, which consisted of weapons produced in the 80s and 90s. He mentioned the fact the United States had facilitated Iraq's WMD program during the Iran-Iraq war and said that some of the weapons being downloaded are similar to those weapons, although international inspectors had announced Saddam Hussein had destroyed all its WMD. Most of these weapons are of Eastern European origin. The U.S. obtained them through confiscations during sales of banned arms during the past two decades, he said. So that's from Iran, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, that deserves a little theme. That is so far beyond the bubble. Again, this may be BS, but or CBS, for that matter. This, though, comes from a somewhat more reliable source, and again, is news from beyond the bubble. But, you know, since the news from beyond the bubble sometimes is so grim, I think we need to cheer it up here. Okay. Dramatic corroboration of the massacre. This just by way of explanation of why this might be interesting. Given the fact that we haven't found any weapons of mass destruction, the rationale for our Iraqi operation has changed to, hey, all those mass graves. True enough. So where else in the world might there be mass graves, ladies and gentlemen? The British newspaper The Observer reports today, dramatic corroboration of the massacre of Afghan prisoners by the U.S.-backed Northern Alliance at the start of the war in 2001 has this weekend been provided by American pathologists commissioned to investigate the claims by the U.N. So American pathologists are saying the our Afghan allies conducted massacres, the evidence of which is in, say it with me now, mass graves. A vivid account of the slaughter was provided to the same newspaper last week by three Britons who were released from U.S. detention camp in Guantanamo Bay more than 2 years after they were first seized in Afghanistan. They told how they narrowly escaped the massacre before being handed over to American forces and flown to Gitmo. They've been released with no charges, just like James Yee, the chaplain, U.S. chaplain in Guantanamo Bay, who was first charged with spying, and then the charges were reduced to possession of pornography and adultery. And all those charges have been released. The U.S. says because to provide the evidence would compromise security. Now, you can understand how providing evidence of spying might compromise security. How does providing evidence of possession of pornography compromise security? Anyway, back to this story. Forensic anthropologist William Haglund, who has investigated mass graves in Bosnia, Rwanda, Sri Lanka, and Sierra Leone. Yeah, we invaded all those, didn't we? Because of the mass graves? He said he dug into an area of recently disturbed desert soil outside the town of Shabargan and exhumed 15 bodies, a tiny sample, he said, of what may be a very large total. They died from suffocation, exactly corroborating the stories told by the Guantanamo detainees. The Guantanamo detainees said they were captured by Northern Alliance forces led by General Dostum as they tried to get out of Afghanistan. At Shabargan, they were herded into two of several truck containers. Then the doors were sealed. He and the others, this is one of the three detainees, lost consciousness. And when he came to, he was lying on top of dead bodies. I'll spare you the details. We lived because someone made holes with a machine gun, though they were shooting low, and still more died from those bullets. When we got out, about 20 in each container was still alive, he said. Haglund, the U.S. pathologist, visited the mass grave at Shabargan twice in 2002 in the wake of the war against the Taliban. By chance, Dostum had gone to the mountains, leaving behind a military escort which allowed him to open the grave. The tales about the detainees' stories assumed importance last week after the another British newspaper, a tabloid, The Sun, published claims by a U.S. embassy spokesman, Lee McClenney, that the three detainees had trained at an al-Qaeda camp in 2000. That would be a reason for detaining them, presumably. They told another British newspaper, The Observer, that they had all confessed to this accusation only after months of solitary confinement and 200 separate interrogation sessions, only to have it finally disproved by British intelligence, which brought documents showing they'd been in Britain at the time they were supposedly training with al-Qaeda. McClenney, the U.S. Embassy spokesman in London, refused to answer questions from journalists, while the U.S. spokesman at Guantanamo Bay said any allegations concerning detainees were highly classified even after their release. I'm violating security by telling you this now, like apparently. Come and get me, copper. Okay, so you can understand Hans Blix. We dissed him. So you can understand why he's saying the war in Iraq has not made the world safer. What is he, Howard Dean or something? And the widening violence there has underscored the need for the UN's backing of military actions. That's what Blix says in an interview. He chastised the Bush administration for its reliance on what he described as faulty intelligence. He says independent inspection teams should gain greater credibility because the UN team's work in Iraq has held up so well. The independent inspections that we were able to provide came closer to the truth than ideology-based intelligence from the national agencies, Blix said. He's plugging his book. Okay, so Blix, we've dissed Blix. David Kay, then. How about David Kay? He cites four major failings of the West's intelligence operation in Iraq. A lack of agents on the ground. Hey, that's a problem with my career. An over-reliance on defectors. More about that in a moment. Almost all of whom lied. A failure to appreciate the true nature of Saddam's Iraq. And a failure in Washington to take an overview of the intelligence. Okay, but that's David Kay. He's quit. He was our chief weapons inspector in Iraq this year. But, you know, what about Richard Clark, former terrorism advisor to both the Clinton and Bush White Houses? You know this story. This is going around the weekend. He's plugging a book, so write him off. He's on 60 Minutes. He says he was surprised the attention of administration officials was turning toward Iraq on 9/11, when he expected the focus to be on al-Qaeda. They were talking about Iraq on 9/11. They were talking about it on 9/12. He was briefing the highest government officials, including President Bush and Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld, in the aftermath of the 9/11 attacks. Rumsfeld was saying we needed to bomb Iraq. We all said, no, no, no. Al-Qaeda is in Afghanistan. says Clark. And Rumsfeld said, there aren't any good targets in Afghanistan, and there are lots of good targets in Iraq. I said, well, there are lots of good targets in lots of places, but Iraq had nothing to do with the 9/11 attacks. Lots of good targets in Mexico, and it's real cheap to get there. He didn't say that. I said that. Clark continues, I think they wanted to believe there was a connection between Iraq and al-Qaeda, but the CIA was sitting there, the FBI was sitting there, I was sitting there saying, we've looked at the issue for years. For years we've looked, and there's just no connection. But he's plugging a book. Okay. Jay Garner, Iraq's first occupation administrator for the United States, abruptly dismissed after a month, says he fell out with the Bush administration because he wanted free elections and rejected privatization of the Iraqi economy. My preference, he says, he tells the BBC this is still news from beyond the bubble. You haven't heard about the Jay Garner interview, have you? So it's beyond the bubble. In an interview broadcast by the BBC, he said, my preference was to put the Iraqis in charge as soon as we can and do it with some form of elections. I thought it was necessary to rapidly get the Iraqis in charge of their destiny. It would have been better for the Iraqis to take decisions themselves, even if they made mistakes. What I was trying to do was get a functioning government. We as Americans like to put our template on things, and our template's good, but it's not necessarily good for everyone else. Jay Garner, our first proconsul in Iraq, describing his dismissal after he called for elections. The night I got to Baghdad, Rumsfeld called me and told me he was appointing Paul Bremer. The announcement was somewhat abrupt. He wanted the Iraqis to decide economic policy for themselves rather than privatization. And apropos of the critique of our reliance on defectors, ladies and gentlemen, the former Iraqi exile group that gave the Bush administration exaggerated and fabricated intelligence on Iraq also fed much of the same information to leading newspapers, news agencies, and magazines in the United States, Britain, and Australia. This according to Knight Ridder newspapers. 100 articles based on information provided by the Iraqi National Congress, a U.S.-funded effort to collect intelligence in Iraq. Those assertions in those articles reinforced President Bush's claims that Hussein was in league with Osama, was developing nuclear weapons, and was hiding chemical and biological weapons. Feeding the information to the news media, as well as to selected administration officials and members of Congress, helped foster the impression that there were multiple sources of intelligence. In fact, many of the allegations came from the same half-dozen defectors, weren't confirmed by other intelligence, and were hotly disputed by intelligence professionals at the CIA, the Defense Department, and the State Department. Nevertheless, U.S. officials and others who supported a preemptive invasion quoted the allegations in statements and interviews without running afoul of restrictions on classified information or doubts about the defector's reliability. Knight Ridder newspapers reviewed all these newspaper citations of the defector's info. They made numerous assertions that haven't so far been substantiated, including that charges that Saddam collaborated for years with bin Laden, that Iraq trained Islamic extremists in the same hijacking techniques used in the September 11 strikes, that Iraq had mobile biological warfare facilities, that Iraq held 80 Kuwaitis captured in the original Gulf War in a secret underground prison. None have been found so far. And so forth. Ladies and gentlemen, there's a reason why the word defector is very closely related to the word defective. News from beyond the bubble. It's bubblicious.
The sea, the sky, and you. And I, sea and sky, and you and I, know all blues, all shades, all hues, all blues. Some blues are sad, but some are glad, dark and sad, or bright and glad. They're all blues, all shades, all hues, all blues. Color, a color, the blues are more than a color. They are a moan of pain, a taste of strife, a sad refrain against which life is playing. Blues can be Lord, in a rainbow, a summer day that's fair, a prayer that's prayed, lament that's made, or goodbye said. Some shade of blue is there, blue, heaven's blue. They are all blues. The sea, the sky, and you and I. Sky and you and I know all blues, all shades, all hues, all blues.
This is Le Show, and a big story this past week, a little story actually, was the revelation that the United States government, Health and Human Services Department, had sent out a video news release packaged and prepared to look like a news report, but actually a piece of publicity from the government, hailing the Medicare program. The new Medicare bill. Now, this is one of two controversies embroiling this Medicare bill that was pushed by the Bush administration last November. One is that, as we've discussed here, the actuary for the Medicare program was the kibosh was put on him so he wouldn't tell Congress what the real price tag of the bill was, and that's going to blow up. And second, a little less important, this story about the government putting out a video news release made to look like a news story with a person with actors playing Medicare recipients and actors playing reporters. But the real story, of course, is the government wouldn't put that out if they didn't have a plausible reason to believe that TV stations would air it, which they did, which they do repeatedly. Most local news operations around the country are full of video news releases sent out by governments or more frequently, pharmaceutical companies. And we wonder, well, we, people in the media wonder why public trust in the media is at an all-time low. Well, ... Now, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast, the apologies of the week and an end to the dots.
We're so sorry.
Can't connect and must end them. Citing public concern, Virgin Atlantic has scrapped plans to install urinals in the shape of a woman's lips. You heard me. You got a problem? At the airline's clubhouse at New York's John F. Kennedy Airport. Everyone at Virgin Atlantic was very sorry to hear of people's concerns about the design of the Kisses urinals, the airline said. We can assure everyone who complained to us that no offense was intended. The urinal was designed by Netherlands-based company Bathroom Mania, which markets the product as, quote, Kisses, the sexy urinal, makes a daily event a blushing experience. This is one target men will never miss. The design is of a woman's mouth with bright red lips opened as if waiting to be kissed. Yuck. Makes What Can Brown Do For You sound tasteful, doesn't it? Apologies in the academic realm. The University of California, Davis has issued an apology to 6,000 admitted students who received an erroneous email indicating they were awarded a prestigious scholarship. The email incorrectly indicated the students had been awarded a Regents Scholarship. The mistake was quickly identified when 3 hours a second email was issued correcting the error and congratulating the students on being admitted to UC Davis but without the scholarship. We take this unfortunate mistake very seriously and deeply apologize for the error, said UC Davis Chancellor Larry Vanderhoof, who's issued a personal letter of apology to the students and their families. Hey, I didn't know that scholarship was prestigious. I got one. Look at my lack of prestige. A Connecticut college president facing claims that he plagiarized material for an op-ed column published in the Hartford Courant announced his retirement on Friday. Richard Judd, president of Central Connecticut State University, apologized this week to the university's faculty senate. He cited health concerns as the reason for his retirement. He plagiarized from 3 sources in an op-ed, an opinion column he wrote for the newspaper. And that can give you health problems. And plagiarizing is tough work, ladies and gentlemen. Take it from me. A high-flying conservative member of parliament was under attack for using the insulting term Welshing during a BBC interview with Radio Wales. He should be under attack for stupidity for that. You know, say that to Radio Scotland, but not Radio Wales. Alan Duncan said, the problem Tony Blair is going to face from his own party in the House of Commons, who will say, look, mate, you can't do that. You promised something democratic and representative, and you're welching on that. Challenged by Felicity Evans, the host of the program, about his use of the term, Duncan said, I beg your pardon. I will choose a better word. I never associated with Welsh people, I have to say. Viacom president Mel Karmazin has apologized for a racist comment phoned into Howard Stern's radio show, but said the remark did not violate federal indecency regulations. I apologize that such an offensive racist term was broadcast on one of our radio stations, he said in a letter to Senator Sam Brownback. Stern had an on-air interview with Rick Salomon, who'd been filmed having sex with hotel heiress Paris Hilton. Stern and Solomon discussed sex acts, and at one point a caller asked Stern's guest if he had had sex with any famous blank chicks. While offensive, this language does not fall within the ambit of the indecency definition, Karmazin said. Hey, isn't it hip that Howard Stern has discovered politics so late in his career? Jim Lehrer of the NewsHour delivered this apology. For those who were watching 2 nights ago, discussion about Iraq ended up not being as balanced as is our standard practice. While unintentional, it was indeed our mistake, and we regret it. That was an apology for a guest who is an author of an upcoming book on Iraq. And he was saying that Christian Parenti, the guest, was saying that Halliburton and Bechtel have failed to provide meaningful reconstruction and that U.S. occupation might actually be contributing to the instability in Iraq. That's the comment Jim Lehrer was apologizing for. Go figure, department. Well, we have so many apologies here. Microsoft has apologized to jurors for his past anti-competitive practices during opening statements in a case in Minneapolis. An Islamic rights group has filed a federal complaint against L.A. talk radio station KFI after it broadcast a skit mocking the new Iraqi constitution, saying it advocated killing Jews and banning such Western teachings as bathing on a regular basis. The station issued an on-air apology. More. A University of New Hampshire professor has been disciplined. Oh, it's another plagiarizing professor. We don't need two of those in one day. KCRW's general manager Ruth Seymour apologized to Sandra Tsing Lo and reversed her decision to terminate the commentator for using a four-letter profanity. Lo turned down the station's offer, citing what she called a toxic environment there. Excuse me. The parents of a Mount Mount Carmel area high school student who was among six female students strip-searched during a high school gym class over the alleged theft of $27 are planning to file a lawsuit. The school officials have apologized. First Lady of Taiwan, Wu Shuchen, apologized for failing to report five huge stock transactions. And finally, we got to move, ladies and gentlemen. We got to move. From the supplier of certain merchandise to the Bush-Cheney campaign to Mr. Tom Jonafiak, general counsel of the Bush-Cheney campaign. Dear Mr. Jonafiak, I'm writing to apologize and accept responsibility for the recent distribution of foreign goods in our Bush-Cheney merchandise program. Unfortunately, in one of our recent shipments, a vendor inadvertently supplied us with foreign goods, and our own company did not discover this mistake before distribution. The purchase orders for these items included a statement specifying made in USA products. We received an acknowledgement from our supplier substantiating that it was their factory mistake. Of the 60 fleece jackets in stock, only two were from Burma. Less than a total of 10 items from Burma were ever shipped to the public. We've taken corrective action to ensure this would never happen again. Ted Jackson, President Spalding Group. Yes, the Bush-Cheney fleece jackets were outsourced, ladies and gentlemen, to Burma. No mass graves in Burma. That's not a mean old dictator or anything. That's not a tyrant oppressing his people in Myanmar. But this outsourcing thing is becoming huge, ladies and gentlemen, as you've already observed. And some try to cure it, deal with it with politics, with protectionism, or some try to deal with it by supporting it, as a Bush administration official did, by saying it was good for the economy. But there's really only one way to deal with outsourcing, and that's to turn it into television.
This man leads a double life.
Hello?
By day, he's Chuck.
Now, I want you to go ahead and restart your computer, okay?
Okay. How do I do that?
Don't ask me. Ask Dr. Phil.
By night, he's VJ.
Pradeep, what's for dinner?
The Empress chicken with tandoori potato cakes and a cauliflower biryani.
Again? Every night with the biryani.
By day, he's an American.
The prongy things, they go into the wall.
Anywhere in the wall, or do I need to find the studs?
Wait a minute, if you've got studs there, why don't they fix your computer?
By night, he's an Indian.
Honey, you're not going to watch the cricket again.
No? And why not?
I don't know, honey. I just thought I might have a wicket that's a little sticky myself.
Let me call my friend Sanjay.
No three sons.
Honey, Sanjay, in the next cubicle, he's the one who sells the online Viagra.
Meet VJ Chuck Banerjee. He's living the dream, but it's covered in curry. Outsourcing was never like this, till it got Fox attitude. Welcome to Bangalore.
Can you find the manual?
Find it. I wrote it.
Where even the in-laws are spicy.
VJ, when will you come back to the old ways? Talking on the phone all night to people half a world away is no life for my son-in-law.
I make good money.
Let me set you up in my business.
Oh, no way. That cardboard box isn't big enough for two beggars.
You're not losing a job. You're gaining a hit comedy. Honey, I'm Hindu. Tuesday, right after the premiere of American Idol Memories. Because this year is Way Fox.
Pilgrim on broken hearted road.
So the issue, ladies and gentlemen, is flip-flops. John Kerry supposedly flip-flops. The Democrats are coming out with a bunch of statements about how the Bush administration has reversed itself. But everybody flip-flops. Try the New York Times in a story about the U.S. paying Iraqi civilians, survivors of Iraqi civilian victims of U.S. Attacks, accidental or otherwise, during the Iraq War. Captain Jonathan Tracy hands out $1,000 for an injury, $2,500 for death. He checks each claim a civilian files against a database of military incident reports, according to according to the New York Times reporter. Quote, "We do keep records of innocent civilians who were killed accidentally by coalition force soldiers," said Brigadier General Mark Hertling. Later in the same story, a Pentagon spokeswoman, Lieutenant Commander Jane Campbell, says, "We don't keep a list. It's just not policy." Flip-flop. Also from the same building, the Pentagon, this week it reversed course, telling Congress it will look into whether an anti-malaria drug developed by the Army might be causing the wave of suicides among soldiers returning or in Iraq and Afghanistan, only 1 month after the Pentagon asserted the drug couldn't possibly be a factor. Flip-flop. And this week, Justice Antonin Scalia gave the final word. He will not recuse himself from a case before the Supreme Court involving his good friend, Vice President Dick Cheney. In a 21-page explanation on Thursday, Scalia said it was not improper for him to go duck hunting in Louisiana with Cheney in January, soon after the court agreed to consider the case, which is a Sierra Club appeal challenging Cheney to provide information about his energy task force. Scalia recounted other cases in which presidents and justices socialized, despite the fact that that wasn't now. He wrote of a time when Justice Harlan Stone tossed around a medicine ball with members of the Hoover administration mornings outside the White House, and when Chief Justice Fred Vinson played poker with President Truman. He wrote, did Scalia, a rule that required members of this court to remove themselves from cases in which the official actions of friends were at issue would be utterly disabling. Many justices, he said, were appointed to the court precisely because they were friends with the president or other senior officials. Is it wrong or right for Scalia to have gone duck hunting with Cheney? Only one real way to find out, ladies and gentlemen.
Next, dueling dramatizations from radio's premier venue of bifurcated possibilities. Alternative Scenario Playhouse. Today, Justice Scalia joins Dick Cheney on a duck hunt. Scenario 1.
Well, here it is, Tony. Nobody knows about this place except the Villachey family and the Secret Service.
And now me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very flattered, Dick.
Hey. Gotta come here with somebody.
Lucky there was space on the plane.
No kidding. Because the train doesn't come here. Well, I was just getting tired of you borrowing my frozen ducks. Time to earn your own.
You got it?
In hand.
You got a couple.
Yeah, winged them. Not a clean kill.
Yeah, amazing that this this area hasn't been developed.
Hey, my friend, this is Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
What'd they put here? Just more of this. Now in Wyoming.
No, I don't think you want to go there. That way lies the topic of energy.
You are so right. Way to spoil a perfectly good morning of poultry death.
These are mine.
Yeah, if they decide to retire. Have you had the prescription in those lenses changed lately?
That's why we have oral argument.
So peaceful. Mm-hmm. Unless you're a duck.
How's Mrs.?
working on a new book about how cultural liberals are killing the First Amendment by overuse.
Recuse me.
Okay. We'll focus on the matter at hand. Want another at bat? I was just wondering... What's that? Shouldn't somebody have brought along a dog? No, not really. This is my fifth trip here, and I haven't hit anything yet.
And now, scenario two on Alternative Scenario Playhouse.
So, here it is, Tony. Nobody knows about this except the Delachey's family and me. We have to talk.
They know about this?
I had to tell them why I needed the swamp.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Hell, they're the ones who supply the ducks. Haven't been any wild ones here since they built the pipeline.
Water?
Natural gas.
All right, that's in the brief about your little energy thing.
Yeah, my little energy thing.
Lucky there was space on the plane.
Yeah. If only 30 more members of my staff had shown up, you'd have had to fly commercial. So obviously, I wouldn't presume to exploit our long and mutually productive friendship for the sake of one vote on a 9-person court.
Of course not.
Nor would I insult the dignity of the court by suggesting that gratitude for this trip...
Or the ducks
should play any role in your deliberative process.
Goes without saying. On the other hand, serious constitutional issue here.
Oh, you bet. Which one in particular?
Well, I was hoping you could maybe suggest one.
Executive privilege. Okay, I got my quota. Next one's yours.
Sure. Ex-priv. As I recall, that's in the brief.
Hey, extra ducks for reading the brief. Jimmy, more ducks.
Very beautiful out here. It's the sound of the ducks and the executive privilege being preserved.
Yeah, it's God's country, all right. And God's pipeline.
Oh, one thing occurs.
Not about the brief, because
shouldn't somebody have brought along a dog?
Oh, hell. If you want dogs, just call me when we get back to D.C. I got 20 in the freezer.
Again next time, symmetrically differing interpretations of a controversial event on Alternative Scenario Playhouse.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this edition of Le Show. The program will return next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe. On the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America on the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.415 megahertz. Around the world via the internet at two different locations on your computer whenever you want it, harryshear.com and kcrw.com, and available as a free download from audible.com at audible.com/LeShow. And we just like getting a high-value target on time. If you'd agree to join with me then, would you already? Thank you very much. Our thanks to the Pittsburgh and San Diego desks for assistance in this week's Le Show. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. Le Show Playlists, usually available at the newly refurbished harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.